welcome to Season 7 of The Process Podcast, an interview series exploring the process of survival as a creative. For this season, we're going back to our roots and talking to all sorts of creatives from a wide variety of industries, backgrounds, and creative endeavors about how they make it all work, from mental health to relationships to money to the creative process itself, and a whole lot more. I'm your host, Shannon Byrne, and I'm just trying to figure it out like the rest of us. Big thanks to the band Blessed for letting us use our song Endure as our intro music for this season. You can find their music at Blessed, that's B-L-E-S-S-E-D, band.bandcamp.com, or wherever you buy your music. And to Hannah Spencer for all of the design and branding and the strategy work she does for us. And Lonnie Webb for running our social media. Thank you for listening. Hope y'all dig it. Hey friends, welcome to episode 90? I think it's 90 of The Process. Before I intro this episode, I just want to say a quick thing. There's a lot of stuff on the internet about how you should and or shouldn't be using your time during this pandemic if you're not sick or, yeah, and I most certainly don't want to add to that. That's the very last thing I want to do. But I just wanted to suggest ignoring all of it and doing what feels right. I don't know. I'm sure there's some really solid tips out there, but it's been frustrating seeing so many people so strongly suggest how other people live, which is different from suggesting resources or like opening oneself up to questions or answering questions that are on the internet about different ways to tackle projects or working out or how to spend your time or create routines or work from home or whatever. It's good that the information's out there for those who are looking for it, but it just has felt a little preachy lately. I hope I'm not adding to that. It's a heavy time, and even if you're not directly impacted or don't have friends or family or anyone directly impacted at this point, collective grief is a thing, and it can weigh heavy on us, and we're all just doing the best that we can do right now. So let's be kind to each other and ourselves. And honestly, I'm probably saying this more for myself than for anyone because I have a tendency to be pretty hard on myself. So yeah, there's that. Moving on. This week, I spoke to him back in November, which is important context for this conversation. But I spoke with Carl Shane of the Boston band Cal Marks, who I am a very big fan of course. They're usually put into like the post-rock genre, as are many of the bands we talk to on the show, but not all. No band really likes to be put into a genre, especially one that kind of doesn't mean anything. But it's weirdo art rock. Again, like a lot of the bands we talk to on this show. My friend Katie introduced me to them a while back. They're also on the same label as a lot of other bands that I enjoy and that have been on the show, including Pile and Shell of a Shell, maybe some others. It's on Exploding in Sound. I had a great conversation with Carl. He also shared some updates via email for this episode, one being they've been hit pretty hard by the pandemic. Obviously, touring and recording has come to a halt, but they lost their day jobs as well. So everything has come to a halt for them. Carl will be putting up some home recordings and demos up on their Bandcamp soon. And there's also a lot of merch on their Bandcamp to help them be able to pay off their van, because they have a van that has payments that need to be paid. So I highly suggest checking out their music. They're at Cal Marks, that's kalmarks.bandcamp.com. Give it a listen. Fans often come up to Carl and ask him what the meaning of a song is, and we'll say something like, because I just lost my sibling or girlfriend, and, you know, it really resonated, and he hears a lot of stories about how their songs have helped people through a tough time. A common theme among many of them is death. And I personally find it cathartic to listen or read or watch or whatever things about death during times like this. Especially because it's not gloom and doom. It's just about the process of living. Anywho, so follow along with them on social media. They're on Twitter, they're Cal Marx Band, and on Instagram it's Cal Marx the Band with underscores in between each word. Follow along so you can be notified when they put those demos and home recordings online so you can snag some. Back to the conversation, we talk about where lyrical inspiration came from, ironically and painfully, sort of. We talk about the dream of not having a day job and whether that'd actually be beneficial artistically. I don't think that applies to a pandemic, going back to what I was saying before introing this conversation, but it also could. We'll see. We will all see. We also talk about the impact literature has on his writing and everyday life, Spotify's impact on record sales, how algorithms can lead to narrow music discovery, other media that can be a great channel for music discovery, what drives Carl to share his music, and where his love of entertaining people came from in his childhood. As mentioned, the pressure to interpret his lyrics for the listener, and how some songs don't really have a meaning. Senior songwriters who've influenced him early on in his musical career, as well as a wide range of influences on the band today. What to expect from the next Cal Marx record, which hopefully we can support them enough to be able to record, because all of that material, or at least a lot of it, is already written. Handling criticism and what success means to him. This was a very fun conversation. It was one of those ones where it did not feel like I was, we did a phone interview, and definitely didn't feel like I was talking to someone I've never met before. Felt like I was talking to an old friend or something. Hopefully it feels that way for you. You can find links to everything we talked about, as well as Cal Marx Bandcamp and social media and all of that, in the show notes. That's at theprocess.co. I hope you all are hanging in there and doing well and are healthy. And if you are creating in this time, which is amazing, I admire you for one, but also share it with us on social media. We'd love to see it. Even if you just send it via DM or something, we're The Process Co. on Twitter and theprocess.co on Instagram. We'd love to see what y'all are working on. And again, if you're literally just staring at a wall, I have been there plenty of times the past few weeks. I'm with you. We're all here together. Keep it easy, y'all.
No, it's no problem. I mean, I just got back from work anyway, so I prefer to be it be a little bit later than like during the day or something.
Cool. What's your day job?
I just work at a warehouse. I've been doing it for a while. It's not like, I don't know, it's not really a rewarding job, but it does allow me to do a decent amount of touring. They're pretty used to having a lot of people in bands. I mean, there's been people from much bigger bands than ours that have worked there over the years. So there, it's pretty common to have people like leave for a month and stuff like that. And I've gotten away with a lot.
That's good.
And I can still always come back and have work.
That's great.
Yeah.
Something to be said for that, for sure.
Yeah. Especially the past 2 years. Like, in 2018, we did over a month of touring, and then we did another, like, 3 weeks in that year, and little weekend trips, like, around those dates and stuff like that. And then in 2019, we took another month to go to Europe. So they're pretty tolerant of it. So, yeah.
That's great. That's definitely helpful.
Yeah.
And it allows you, gives you enough time to be able to like write and work on stuff when you're not touring?
Well, lately I have been wondering if I just didn't have this job, if I would have more time to write, because the thing is, I don't have any, I can't calculate when inspiration is ever going to strike. So sometimes it happens at work, but then you wonder, if I wasn't working, would I have the inspiration that just popped into my head for, like, I mean, I write lyrics when I'm just like walking down the street or whatever. Like, I don't really set out the time. It's just sometimes something just comes to you and you're just like, ah. And when I'm home, I definitely try to, you know, I make dinner and then I sit down and I just sit down with a guitar and try to play. I try to like schedule things a little bit, but you never know. Sometimes you can sit down with your instrument and nothing will happen. So, that's a big question. I don't know if I would be more productive or if I'd be less productive. It's weird. Sometimes when I have nothing going on, nothing will also happen.
Yeah.
But, I've always, you know, that's what everybody questions, like, oh, I wonder if I could do music as a full-time job. And I really don't, I don't know. I would definitely take the chance on it because I love doing it. And my job isn't, I don't love my day job. So I would definitely go for it. But I do wonder if I tried it out after like maybe a year of like, doing music full time, I'd be like, yeah, I need to get a day job.
Right. Yeah. It's interesting. Yeah. I don't want to pigeonhole any of your lyrics, but it definitely feels like, you know, a lot of your songs are about the questions that come up through like every day is kind of like just the day to day life that so many people live that isn't necessarily like glamorous, but the stuff you start to think about and how like quickly time starts to go by, right? That I feel like if you are just working on your art every day, time might move a little bit slower. And maybe, you know, you're not asking yourself these like big existential like questions that come up when you're maybe not totally content with what you're doing the majority of the time.
Yeah. I always got that from like certain writers, not like songwriters, like actual writers that, you know, you find out that they had completely separate life from their art, you know, from what they wrote, even though their work, their writing is like what we know them for, but they did have a separate, like William Carlos Williams was a doctor. Charles Bukowski worked a bunch of mundane jobs, which honestly, like, I don't share a lot of the same beliefs as that guy at all, but I see how somehow my life has mirrored his in that I've worked a lot of mundane, pointless jobs that really make you feel like your life has no meaning, but then it inevitably ends up in the songs. And you're like, what? Like this, you know, I remember reading The Post Office by him and being like, this is like, it's weird how this is echoing my life. I'm not like a drunk that... like kind of like a chauvinist drunk like he was, but
I had a hard time reading that book.
But yeah. It's weird. I read a lot of stuff that I don't necessarily agree with, but I do like the different point of view. And I also read a lot of stuff that I do agree with. Like I read a lot of stuff by people that I admire like a lot that like I think lived a very virtuous life that I'm like, oh man, I'd like to be like that, you know? Yeah.
Any examples?
But he's one. Yeah.
Oh, sorry. Any other examples?
Oh, no. James Baldwin. Mm-hmm. I really admire that guy. To me, he's like, I don't know how to describe it, actually. I just love how he was such a deep intellectual. And I can't think of any others off the top of my head, but that was the first one that definitely came to mind.
Yeah.
I watched that documentary on him recently, and I was really kind of blown away.
I haven't seen it.
It's I think it's on one of those streaming services. I can't remember. Yeah, it's called, well, I feel weird saying this, but it's called I'm Not Your Negro. It's definitely worth watching. Very informative. Great stuff.
Do you think there's a world?
Mr. Rock, even though he wasn't a writer, that's somebody that you look at and go, Jesus, like, I wish I could be half as good as that person.
Did you say Mr. Rogers?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Rogers, yeah.
For sure. I remember being little watching it and being like, guy's kind of a nerd, but you can't help but to love him for all of his goodness.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah.
Do you think there's a world in which you have a job that's, like, as fulfilling as making your own music? Like a day job?
Yeah. I just don't know what it is. But I always, like, conversations I would tell people, I'm like, you know, maybe I'll become, like, a social worker. Or something like that. Something that actually really does something good for people. The job that I have, like my day job, it really doesn't feel like it does any good to the world. Mm-hmm. I'm just shipping stuff out, you know? It's not like, it would be great to do like a actual service to people. But I always fear that, like, well, if I became a social worker, would I be able to tour?
Mm. Yeah.
And that's my biggest fear, because I don't want to let go of playing music. I know I haven't made any money doing music, but it's really, it makes me feel alive.
Yeah.
So I'd love to find something that could coexist well with being a musician. This job does, but it's kind of soul sucking.
Right. You know?
Even if my boss heard that, he would be like, yeah, it is.
Right. Yeah. Which is,
he would not be offended.
Yeah. Which is also makes it like, that's also a sign of a good job when it comes to jobs like that. It's worse when someone thinks that you're supposed to act as though it is the most important thing in the world.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Yeah.
Not that you
I work know. With a lot of great people, though. So, that's the one thing that's amazing. I know a lot of other people there are artists and musicians and comedians. So
you, and I'm glad you brought up the like the money touring things. I know you've been pretty vocal and like honest about losing money on tour and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Which, I mean, I'm frustrated for you. As a fan of your music.
Well,
I guess what keeps you...
I feel bad about how much I complain about it, though.
Oh,
I complain way too much.
I think it's also important to, like, for people to understand that that's how it works for so many musicians. Like, you are not alone in that by any means.
Mm.
It is a reality for so many artists out there. So by you talking about it, it kind of lets fans know, especially in the age of streaming when they're not paying very much money for a lot of music. And it lets emerging musicians know who might think that they can, that they're going to like be rich, you know, and it doesn't really work out that way.
In this age of Spotify and whatnot, I mean, I hate to sound like a technophobe, but I do think it's like, it's so useful, but I think it has its setbacks for sure. And with Spotify now, I've definitely noticed that when we're on tour, people have said this multiple times to me. They're like, "Hey, I'd buy a record, but like, I'll just listen on Spotify, you know? Like, and you guys will get money." And you're like, "Oh." And most of the times I don't tell them because it's nice that they like it, and I don't want to sound ungrateful, but there's been a few times when I'm like, "Do you want to know the truth?" And they're like, "What's that?" I'm like, "You don't see any money from Spotify."
Right.
It's fractions of a penny. It's because it's so easy to use now. Like, we used to get a decent amount of record orders or downloads on our Bandcamp, and now we hardly get any. Mm. And then even at shows, it feels like we sell less records too. I know it's just so convenient, so I can't really blame anybody for using it. But the truth is that it seems like it really helps out these really, really big artists, but it doesn't help the indie or whatever, you know, underground bands that much. I mean, I haven't noticed it really helping us at all, but it's hard to say, like, I can't really see it. And I don't really want to look at the numbers, too, because I think those are just end up being kind of disheartening anyways, because it just makes everything into a popularity contest. And to be like, oh, like, I only have 20,000, but Yada Yada has 60,000 for this one song. And it's like, I have to stop and smell the roses and be like, wow. I mean, that one song has 20,000 listens. That's great. That's still pretty wild. But then you can't help to look at some other band that might be in your peer. And then you look at, they got 60. Oh, right. What did I do wrong? And it's like, well, music shouldn't be about that. We always have quantified music and we've always categorized music, but now we're doing it even more because of Spotify. Now I've been seeing people get their year end rap thing. Mm-hmm. And it's like, this is your top 10. And I don't know, music shouldn't be, I don't like to, I understand why people like kind of make lists and stuff like that, but I can't help but think that, you know, music is just made to be listened to and loved and cherished and not be turned into a superlative type thing, like best hair, you know, or like award shows and stuff like that. Like, it's made to be listened to. And I think you would have a lot more time to listen to it if you weren't categorizing it. And because there's just like, I mean, a lot of people, I'm sorry, I'm going for a long stretch on this one, but a lot of people are always saying, like, yeah, like, you hear people all the time, there's no good music. It's like, actually there is. Yeah. It's just you're listening to algorithms and instead of
talking to your friends, talking to random people, right?
There's a good chance that, you know, every friend group probably has one, at least one or two friends that are like, oh, like that, he or she really digs for music. That's where I get all my music recommendations, are my friends that are just, they're diggers. They dig. And they find stuff, and they find really amazing stuff. And the internet is great for that too. But when I think, like, if you find forums where it's actually being catered by real music lovers and whatnot, like, those are really great. But on Spotify, things are being recommended to you by algorithm. Yeah. That just sounds scary to me. That just sounds like, you know, like Terminator kind of world that we're going to live in, where it's never going to throw you a wrench either, too. Like, sometimes, like, something really catches your ear because it's so different. But with Spotify, you'll never really hear something different. If you're like, oh, well, we noticed you like Archers of Loaf, and we noticed that you like, you know, like, have you thought about Pavement? It's like, that's not really leaps and bounds. Right. You know, you're just going to end up getting the same circle. Yeah.
I did discover a cool punk band on Spotify today, and I was a little bit annoyed that I discovered it on Spotify. but it also
wasn't
a leap from what I was listening to, you know.
Yeah, I'm still not putting it down. Like, I don't want to put it down, but I do think that there's more to this than just Spotify. I think there's more, I mean, sometimes the best way to find music is just like walking into something. Like, yeah. Like, wait, what is, because people can, I really trust that there are really good people out there that curate really amazing things. Like, there's even like directors, like filmmakers that make really great movies, and a song comes on and you're like, what the hell is this song? And then, and thanks to technology, we have Shazam now and you can find out what song it is. But I really, I rather trust actual human beings than an algorithm. Yeah.
I have to tell you that I used to run a service called A Song a Day, and we were a community of curators sending handpicked songs based on your preferences to your inbox every day. And it was,
oh, really?
Yeah, it was very much the anti-algorithm music discovery tool.
Yeah.
We were like 45 weirdos great. Just sending people emails.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was awesome. But managing 45 volunteers to send daily emails wasn't sustainable,
yeah.
It turns out.
Yeah.
But yeah, but I hear you, all that to say. I'm a big fan of people connecting with people, or film and books. And I love reading like Patti Smith and just writing down all the names that she mentions, you know?
Yeah.
Of, like, artists to check out. And I have.
Yeah. I mean,
I will also say, this is embarrassing, but I feel like I have to tell you now. I looked up my stupid Wrapped thing, and Cal Marx was my third most listened to band of 2019.
All right. I hope you don't feel like I'm like embarrassing you or at all for doing that, because I did too.
Right.
but then I immediately felt bad about it. I don't even remember what my top, I think it was like, you listen to a lot of Neil Young. It's like, I already know that.
Right. Yeah. Switching gears.
Yeah.
Actually, not switching gears a bit. I mean, well, I think it's kind of clear that what keeps you going, despite the lack of financial reward, is it sounds like you just truly love it and love, I guess, what makes you share it rather than making the art and keeping it for yourself or for just you and your, you know, loved ones and friends and stuff?
There could be multiple answers for that, but maybe part of it is just like, I like attention, just like anybody else does. I know that sounds like shameful, but it's okay to say that you like attention. I think I play shows because I like, I don't know. I mean, sometimes I really hate attention too, though. I mean, I think there's also part of sharing music was just, you know, it's just, well, that's what you do. Like, I don't even really think about it, but if there was a deep reason for it, yeah, I don't know. I don't know why I share it. Other than, I guess you're curious if anybody would like it. I mean, it's also just similar to just general communication. Music is communication. And if you don't communicate, you end up bottling stuff up and feeling rotten. And I think I would just feel really terrible if I didn't share what I was feeling inside. And what our songs are about are about things that I'm feeling, or what the group is feeling. You know, I mean, yeah, that's why people see therapists and stuff like that, I guess. Or just, you know, have long discussions with their close friends. I think it's kind of similar to that, maybe. And then you do hear word up from people saying like, hey, this song really meant a lot to me. And once you get that, like, that one scratch on, like, on your back about like, hey, like, I really love this and it caught me at a really good time, then that kind of fuels you to also continue forward. And I get a lot of crazy, I appreciate it all, but I do get a lot of wild stories from people. like what people interpret the lyrics as being, and or stories of what this or that song meant to them, or what was happening to them at the time. So sometimes I almost feel like I owe it to them to continue on. But I also think I owe it to myself the most, I guess. I really love playing to people. I really love, like, everybody's like, oh, your music is all doom and gloom. But when we play live, like, it's fun. It's really fun. I'm a total buffoon on stage, and I get a real kick out of it. And I think people get a real kick out of my buffoonery on stage. And it really makes me feel good to see people with a smile on their face from my stupidity.
Right.
So that's a big part of why I play shows. I really, really like entertaining people. I think since I was a kid, I always loved, like, you know, my dad would tell me jokes to tell to my uncle or something like that. I remember my dad gave my brother a whole entire, like, comedy routine to do for a high school talent show. My dad's always, like, at a dinner party, my dad's always the one that's cracking people up the most. It was kind of like having, like, Don Rickles for your father or something like that. My dad's hilarious and my brother's hilarious, so it just kind of rubbed off on me. And then my mom's a nurse, so my mom treats people, and so maybe that also rubbed off on me too. Like, I hate to compare myself to, like, a nurse does a much better service to this world than I do, but it's like maybe there's a part of me that actually likes treating people to a good time.
I mean, and
maybe giving them a break.
And in all fairness, like, I don't, speaking personally, music in general has done way more for my soul than, like, medicine has done for, like, given I've been very lucky and haven't had to go to the doctor for many things. So, but, like,
yeah,
I wouldn't. Yeah, I hear what you're saying. Nurses play a very pivotal role in people's lives and helping them and sometimes saving them.
Yeah.
But I think music also, emotionally, spiritually, whatever, mentally, is pretty important to people too. And inspires other people to make other art.
Yeah, I don't know. I know it sounds so lame, but music is just so special. And so I think it's sacred, you know.
Yeah. What does your dad do for a living?
Well, both of my parents are retired now. They're lucky enough to have that option to them. They worked forever. My dad worked in, like, point of sales, like computer programming for, like, point of sales kind of computers. So stuff that would be in restaurants and fast food restaurants and maybe sometimes even other kinds of stores and stuff like that. But my dad always had interests in other things. I mean, my dad is a genius. He's extremely smart. He is, like, one of the most well-read people I know, a history buff. But he's also, like, a total child of Mel Brooks.
Right.
I grew up with him doing, like, Mel Brooks and, like, Monty Python bits to me. Before I ever even saw any of that stuff, you know, my dad would do A Silly Walk or something like that. Mel Brooks was huge in my household. I remember just, like, seeing Young Frankenstein at early age. Yeah. But now my parents are both retired and they still busy themselves. They refinish furniture or mostly, like, mid-century modern type stuff.
Cool.
They find old pieces and they, you know, will strip them of their old veneer or whatever and refinish them and, you know, maybe even, like, fix the handles and stuff like that or fix the drawers and then sell it for, like, a decent profit. And they actually, in their retirement, they've actually made a decent, like, you know, not like secondary income off of that. And my dad's even like learning how to work with electronics, because a lot of the pieces that they get sometimes will have like a record player in it or some kind of radio or electronics in it, because that's just kind of in the fashion of the mid-century modern kind of things. Like you pull this drawer out and something like a record player pops out of it.
Right. It's pretty rad that that's like their retirement career. It's pretty cool.
Yeah. I mean, they fascinate me sometimes. I'm like, man, I wish I was that handy and crafty like them. They're both super capable of so many different things. And I'm just like, I can play a couple chords on a guitar.
You mentioned people interpreting your lyrics and sharing that with you. How does that feel when that happens, especially when they're misinterpreted? Or I know that might not be like a thing for you, you know, maybe interpreted in a way that's like way different than where your head was when you were writing them.
I'm okay with people interpreting it, unless if it was interpreted for something awful. Like, then I would be like, oh my gosh, like, no, please. Like, but that's never happened. I've never had lyrics misinterpreted as like an awful, evil thing, you know? I've worried about that. So, like the song Fuck That Guy, mm-hmm. like I always worried that people would interpret it as being like, you should fuck a guy or something like that, when it's clearly about just like a bad guy that you don't like, you know?
Right.
I'd hate for any of my lyrics to be interpreted as encouragement of unhealthy behavior, but I don't know if it ever has been, but sometimes people will ask if, you know, this song is about a certain person and it's actually not. Or the craziest thing was somebody asked if this one song was about losing somebody. And I totally understood why they would think that, but it wasn't. They came up to me at like the merch table at a show.
Mm-hmm.
And they told me like, is that song about losing somebody? Because you know, like, it's what it seems like to me. I'm like, it's not, but, you know, it can be, you know, like,
right.
If it is for you, like, then it is for you. And then they were like, oh, okay, could you play that song tonight? I was like, sure. And like, oh, yeah, because my girlfriend died last week.
Jesus.
And I was like, what? A what?
Yeah.
And I just was like, what are you? If I was like, wow, you're here?
Right
now, yeah. I really don't mind. I mean, some of our lyrics don't mean anything, though.
Mm.
There are certain songs that some of them definitely do, and some of them don't. They vary from song to song. Some are more interpretive. Some are just gobbledygook. Sometimes you just want to express a feeling, so it doesn't actually have to follow any storyline or anything. Like that song Grand Mall does not, it doesn't mean anything. It's just expressing being aggravated with yourself or decisions you've made. Yeah, there's a lot of that. It just depends on what the song's called for, too. Like sometimes it just comes out and you're like, whoa, that's clearly about this point in my life. Like I just can tell that this is about that. But sometimes it's just about how, like the feeling, but not about a specific event or person or action. Yeah.
No.
And also I am getting kind of tired of like whenever we do like a new record, like it's coming out, every time we have to like explain thoroughly what the songs are about. And I'm like, I thought that was already done. Like,
right.
I, you know, like I wrote this song. Now it's up to you. Like I sometimes like get kind of annoyed with having to do that. Sometimes songs are just songs and it's for the listener, you know, it's not to be, you can dissect it. I don't know.
Yeah, yeah. Like how often do people ask poets to explain what a poem is about? Maybe it's as common.
Yeah.
I mean,
I'm trying not to sound like I'm bitter or like, or I'm unappreciative, because I told, whenever somebody asks you what a song is about, clearly they're asking because they probably like the song. But like once the song is written and recorded, like my job is kind of done, right?
Do you think it has anything to do with the fact that there is a theme? There's a lot of your songs around death. Like on the surface level, there is like a death theme. I wonder if that, although to your earlier point when you mentioned like the doom and gloom thing, I'm like, I don't really consider Cal Merch. That's not how I filter it through. It's more like just like a, this is a reality, let's make the most of it type of thing. If anything, I find it to be like almost lighthearted. But do you think maybe that's why people feel the need to find a meaning or to ask you about it? It's quite the speculation.
I don't know. Yeah, I can't really totally know for sure. Well, everybody has questions about death. And it is one of the most intriguing topics. It will never not be an intriguing topic. And it is true that there is a decent amount of death in our songs, talking about death, talking about our inevitable death, talking about a friend's or family member's death.
I guess I was trying to just come up with a reason for why people would expect you to enter, you know, why they feel the need to have an answer rather than coming up with their own, I guess. Or maybe I'm wondering if it makes them like uncomfortable enough to think about such topics that they need to know what you were thinking rather than come up with, you know, sit with their own thoughts around it.
Well, in that case, I do feel like I should be appreciative of them wanting more of an answer. I mean, it's kind of awesome that anybody would engage with our music because our music is not always easy to listen to. So the fact that anybody is listening to it is really gratifying to me. But I still don't, I still don't think I have an answer for them. Like, you know, an answer why they want an answer. You know, life is, the truth is a lot of our songs are about questioning, not about answers. I don't really feel like I have any. I think questioning is a good thing to do. I think questioning is always great. And I think you should question things regardless if you ever are going to get an answer.
Right.
I think questioning is the main venture, because also like in life, as I'm getting older, my answers are changing day to day anyways. So, you know, what I used to think was the truth isn't the truth always anymore, or it's slightly different. It's still kind of there, but it's corroded or melded or matured.
Yeah. Would you mind, I want to ask you about like what's coming up soon, but.
Oh yeah.
Would you mind first elaborating a bit on the songwriting process? You spoke to it a bit, but what does that process look like for you and the group?
It can be different for every song, really. Usually I'm coming to band practice with the ideas, the majority of the ideas, but we really do work on them together. And then sometimes there's even, you know, Mike will play a bass riff, and I'll be like, what is that? Or there'll be like a drum rhythm, and I'm like, whoa, wait, what if we repeat that over and over and over again? And then I'll come up with some ideas to it. So it is based around my ideas and thoughts, but it is really collaborative, but it can be different from song to song. I started this thing many years ago as like just a solo project because I was really into like singer-songwriter stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And folk music. I still am. I still really like the great classic songwriters, you know, everything from like, I mean obviously Bob Dylan was, I don't admit this that much, but like I was obsessed with Bob Dylan, end of my high school years, and then Tom Waits, and then Leonard Cohen, Joni Mitchell, even Carole King, Curtis Mayfield, so on and so forth. Even Bill Callahan. Really, like I really liked that stuff, and I still think that is a thread that still follows to this day, even though we've morphed and mutated into, I don't even know what the hell kind of band we are anymore. I think it's like just weird rock, I guess.
Yeah.
But lately I've been kind of bored of the guitar. So I don't feel like I'm picking up the guitar as much, and I'm more like writing stuff in my head.
Interesting.
Like I'll hear a riff in my head and I'll start working on it in my head, because I, you know, I just get tired of doing the same old routine over and over again. And I'm sure I will. I mean, the other day I wrote a new song on guitar, but I have to give certain things a break, the old methods a break, and then maybe I can return to them again. Like right now, I'm really, really excited about new material, new songs and stuff like that.
Cool. I never know the right terminology for asking this question, but do the sonics come to you first, or lyrics, or is it just a mixed bag entirely? Like, well,
yeah,
riff
can,
cover,
man, it can alter. I mean, the sonic, like production idea definitely is like the last thing for sure. But I definitely have ideas in my brain, and so does Mike, for production ideas. Like we get those in our heads even before we record, you know. And I think we have a lot of thoughts on how to record things. I think we've kind of almost turned into like kind of a production type team as well. But there is a couple songs that the lyrics have come first, because I'm just like, oh my gosh, like I don't know how that came popped into my head, but that needs to be turned into a song. Like Life is Murder, a song that it's always requested for us to play.
Yeah.
That song was lyrics first, and then I wrote. But usually, I would probably say usually the guitar riffs and guitar chords and progression usually come first. But every so often, there's like, I'll keep a notepad of like funny lines or sayings. I feel like, oh, maybe there's some poetry to that, or that would be a great title. And then, yeah, so it could be a mixed bag for sure.
Yeah, I wish I knew how to ask you about the details of the instrumentation. I am not a musician. Those are things I don't really know how to talk about, but it really, y'all come up with some interesting sounds. But all right,
yeah,
I enjoy
yeah,
listening.
Thank
you.
I mean, Mike is like a really unique bass player, I think. I mean, he can do anything, I think, but he's like really creative. There's a lot of times when people are like, what is that sound? And I'm like, they're like, is that a synthesizer or something like that? And I'm like, no, that's Mike's bass.
Yeah.
And they're like, oh, what pedals is he using? I'm like an overdrive, nothing super crazy. He's super talented at making a bass sound like something else. I kind of do that too sometimes with, I don't know, I kind of treat the guitar like, more like it's negative space. If it was a painting,
mm-hmm.
it kind of fills out the negative space. Instead of, usually the guitar is like a big focal point. And sometimes it is in our songs, but sometimes I feel like I'm doing more atmosphere, and the drums and bass are kind of the plot, and then the voice is the narration. But sometimes with guitar, it's just totally in the background. And I kind of like that. Like, because usually guitar demands so much attention. It's sonically, because it's, you know, usually in the mid range. Yeah, I work with really clever, creative people. And I think we're always thinking about how can we throw a wrench into this? How can we, you know, like we like pop songs and pop structures and stuff like that, but there's always like, oh, this rhythm, it needs to be fucked up with, you know? You know, you want to make it feel original and unique.
Yeah. Have you ever listened to the band Beak?
I love that band. I absolutely love that band.
That's
I'm not going to lie, like, I feel like they've been creeping into what we've been working on lately.
Really?
Because also I'm really big Portishead fan, really
okay.
big, specifically the third record, and it feels like Beak really picks up from where that record left off.
Yeah.
I love that band. I found out your podcast because you interviewed Jeff Farrow.
Yeah. Which was, I ran into them earlier this month and was very happy that we're like gave each other big hugs and we're hanging out because that interview was like not my best interview. And it was the first time I was like, it was the first time I was like truly intimidated to interview somebody.
Oh yeah. I would be too. I totally would be. Your records changed my, like, way I hear things, you know. Yeah. It really has.
They're very nice.
I like.
They're super nice.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
Yeah.
Jeff can be intimidating.
Yeah. I mean, what he did with Portishead is really incredible in that. And there's other people that have done similar kind of things where just, like, you know, taking very different ideas and somehow making them work. And I hope and believe that we can do something kind of similar because I know that we live in the aggressive music world, but I think we have really wide range of influence of, like, you know, everything from like punk music to krautrock to folk music and, you know, punk and metal and stuff. He's huge influence on us.
Cool. Good band to be influenced by, for sure. So I feel like you've given us some hints towards what we can expect. And I read somewhere that you have like a bunch of material. Is it recorded or already written? What's
going on? Nothing's recorded. No. Okay. No. Because of some recent tours, I really don't want to sound like the tours were awful because they weren't. Like, our European tour was the greatest tour ever. Like, it really blew my mind. And there was moments I wanted to just like break down and cry. I've never been appreciated like that before. None of us have. But it was a really high overhead, and there were some certain things that I wasn't prepared that would, like, cost that I wasn't prepared to take on that I was like, ooh, I didn't know these tolls would be that expensive or stuff like that. And then we had a tour this fall where we did okay, but I was really hoping that we do better. So I really thought we were going to come out of that tour with enough money for the next record, but we definitely didn't get there. But I think we will sometime into next year. I mean, the plan is always to go forward, and me and Mike really, really are gung-ho about making this next record. We are going through a band change, though. Our drummer has quit the band recently. You know, he's just settling down in his life, mm-hmm. getting married and stuff. So we are, like, I feel pretty good, though, about, we got, like, one person. I don't want to give too much away, but we got one person that we are going to start working with next week. And we'll see how it goes. I have really high, I don't know, I have a good feeling about it. And I always shared the new stuff with them, and they're excited about it to potentially work on it with us. We have all these demos, though. So there's demos of all these new songs, and there's enough for another record. And some of the songs, but most of the songs actually have been written even before this EP, the songs on this EP were written.
Okay.
We just have been saving them for this next record because they just work better together. And the mm-hmm. songs that were on the EP, I felt like worked better together. But these new songs are a little, I don't know how to describe it, but it's a little bit more groovy, I guess. Definitely. Yeah, I wish I had a better.
Are they? Is it? Can we expect as much yelling? Is it less yelling?
Oh, yeah. There's a lot. more yelling, but there's a lot of, I wouldn't say that there's a lot of just everything, I guess. And we're trying to chisel it down because there is still like a lot of singing too.
Okay, cool.
Or maybe it's just a going further down the rabbit of what we've already done. Maybe that's a better way of describing it because it's still heavy and aggressive and there's still some throaty singing. But there's also a lot of singing in falsetto as well. But I just feel like rhythmically it's like a little bit more groovy. Like it has like a grooving, like, I don't know, just listening to a lot of like stuff like James Brown and krautrock stuff. And I really find those like hypnotic rhythm ambitious. And then I think there's also just a lot, maybe some of the stuff that I was doing with my guitar, like the stuff that I was doing with my guitar on certain songs, like Loosed, or maybe like more of that kind of going further down that rabbit hole of weird atmospheric sounds. So there's like a bit of that. One person even told me that, like, they're like, one of your new songs sounds like a disco song. And I was like, what? I still don't see that. But my brother has been playing, like, has shared a lot of disco music with me. So maybe that just, like, leaked out into subconsciously. Yeah. But I'm really excited about the new material just because I feel like it's also a little bit more mature, I think, in its approach. I think the kind of subjects that I'm writing about for this next one are a little bit more mature.
That's one of the fun things about making art, right? But also one of the scary things about doing it publicly is that it's so fun to watch yourself evolve and grow and, you know, and mature. And then when you visit, I'm projecting, I'm speaking personally. I won't speak about your art, but I visit the older stuff that I've written and I'm like, all right. I'm glad that I've evolved a bit as a human, but that's, you know, it's fun to look back at it and reflect on that and see the ways in which we grow how our perspectives shift.
I have a hard time, like if we have to like re-listen to an old song to like relearn the song, like I get kind of cringy when I hear my voice because I feel like my voice has like, I've gotten to know it better. Like I've gotten to figure out how to use it better. And when I listen to some old songs, I'm like, oh, I did not know how to sing. but you know, it's honestly, what you were saying, it's scary, like to put it out there and stuff. It is because, I mean, no matter what you do, like somebody's going to hate it. And, even no matter how true you are to what you're doing, and I can't help it, but sometimes I will stumble across something that is said and I'm just like, ooh, it like kind of stings a little bit, but you have to have a tough skin. I mean, there's been what people say negative about the band is not about the band and what, it's specifically about me. They're like, I hate this guy's voice. So it's never like, oh, the drummer stinks or the bass player sounds like he doesn't know what he's doing. It's always fuck this guy's voice. The worst was I saw a comment that was made was like, everything about this band should be what I'm into, like sonically. They touch on all the things I like, but you know, homeboy sounds like Dave Matthews and I can't get behind that. And I was like, what?
Wow.
And I was like, that one kind of hurt because I was like, it's hilarious though now looking back on it, but it kind of hurt because it was like, so everything in our makeup is like something you would like you like the rhythm, you like the muscly bass and the heavy guitar sound, but it's just basically saying to somebody like, you're a very attractive person, but your face just sucks.
Right.
It's just like, oh, I'm like, you know, it's because the voice is like, it feels a little bit more personal because it's actually your like coming out of your, it's your actual organ.
Right.
You do play your instrument with your hands, and it's coming, it's like an extension of your body, but your voice is actually your body. And it's like, it's just like telling somebody, like, your body sucks.
Right.
And you're like, oh.
Oh, yeah. People are dicks.
Yeah. I mean, they have every right to say whatever they want, though, you know. It's a free country. And you just, like, you know, no matter what you do, I think it was, Eleanor Roosevelt said, like, do what you want to do, because whatever you do, people are going to hate you anyway.
Yeah.
You might as well just do what you want, you know. And I think what we do is, the music that we make is, like, music that we want to make, like, because it doesn't feel like it's, like, I feel like we're making original music. I hope people think the same. I like to believe that what we're doing is unique, and I especially think that the next record will kind of break the mold even more. It'll probably scare some people away, though.
Well, like you said, it's the thing with art. You can't please everyone, but focus on those who are into
it. It's impossible.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I'm definitely excited to hear it when it's ready for ears.
I think we just need to, like, do a little bit more touring and raise some money that way. And then I think the plan would be probably for the fall of next year to record it, and then maybe have it out by 2021, I guess, which sounds really crazy because it's still only 2019.
Right. But we'll probably have, like, two more albums ready to go by then.
Yeah. Maybe. Yeah. Inspiration. You have no idea. You have no idea what's going to happen.
Right. With the way the record,
just try to,
the whole label thing, does that, is it more like you're paying for the production, the recording and production of it, and then, like, they help with distribution? Is that?
Yeah. We pay for the recording. They pay for it to be put to vinyl and for it to be sent out into the world and all that stuff. All the stuff that I really don't know a single thing about. Like, I don't think I do. I don't know it well enough, I guess, how you deal with distribution or deal with press. I honestly, if I had to deal with figuring out press, it would probably put me to sleep. I mean, I like doing this. If anybody ever wants to do an interview, I'm, like, totally pretty game to do it, because I'm a talker. Maybe too much of a talker, but I don't mind sharing and talking with people. But when it comes to trying to figure out who should write this, or trying to convince, like, that's what press is. Like, press is just, like, trying to convince blogs and magazines or whatever to be like, hey, would you want to give my band a chance? And it's like, I don't think I can do that.
Right. The whole putting yourself out there and doing it via email, either not getting a response or getting a two-word response isn't the best for the psyche. That's for sure.
You have to figure out tactics. Music isn't really tactical, I guess. I mean, like, you're trying to be artistic, you know. You're following the muse or whatever, you know. You're not trying to do it for superficial reasons. But press is, like, you know, kind of superficial. I mean, kind of is, you know.
Especially today.
Trying to win people over.
Yeah.
Was it?
Yeah. Especially today, too, because a lot of publications want the name and the headline to drive as many clicks to their website as they want to actually drive plays for the group, you know.
I really hate to, like, make it sound like I'm, like, bullying or talking down about that world, because I do have some friends that are music journalists, and I think they do some really great work. There's a handful of great music journalists, but there's also, like, a lot of, it becomes a popularity contest, and it's really weird to me sometimes. And there's a lot of music, so it's really hard to make time for all of it.
Yeah, it's true. There's a ton out there. I'm going to ask you the two questions I've been asking everyone for this season, and then we can wrap it up if that's cool.
That sounds great. Thank you.
Yeah. This question I've been toying with, so we'll see how it goes. What does the word, and I feel like we've been talking about it the whole entire time, but what does the word success mean to you in general? Mm. How do you interpret it? How do you feel about it?
Yeah, success is kind of like seeing something through. That's the basic saying you want to do something and then doing it. Now, I guess a lot of people think about success as purely as a financial thing. And I totally get that because, and in that case, we have been one of the most unsuccessful bands, but we have, you know, and we've definitely had some failures where we tried to see something through and it didn't work out for us. But we've done some things like that I never thought we would be able to do because it just seems so daunting to me. But, you know, the task of like going to Europe, I was like, so like, I don't even know how I can do it. And we did it and we had a great time. So that would be a success, even though it was financially not a success. If I had to think of the biggest success stories, my biggest success stories would probably be a lot different than other people's ideas of success. Like if they were like, well, who's successful to you? I'd be like Tom Waits. And they might not even know who Tom Waits is.
Right.
Because he didn't win over the mainstream ever, really. But he's made whatever the hell he wanted to make. And he stayed true to himself. So that would be success to me. I mean, if you could live living a life of music and really like success would be like the opposite of success for me would be, which I know I'm not going to name names, but I know some people that are actually making some money, but they're doing something they absolutely hate.
Right.
There's some people that are like, yeah, I used to have this band that I loved that was like so creatively rewarding to me, but now I'm playing, guitar in this other band that, you know, we go all around the world, but I hate the music. I'm like just like, oh yikes, you know.
Yeah.
that wouldn't be success to me. Yeah.
No, last question, at least I say that, but what's something you're excited about today?
Ooh. Outside of music,
it can be anything.
It's really just music, like working on music. Really cool. Is always, I guess I'm really one track mind, but if there was stuff outside of music that I have to say that I'm really excited for, it'd probably be like super lame. Like it'd be like, oh, the next episode of The Watchmen.
We get those answers.
Yeah.
It's not lame. It's real.
I'm excited for, I have a lot of dread too, so, This sounds really weird, but I am excited for the next election.
Yeah.
I also have a lot of dread about it because I have a deep fear that it's just going to go terribly, but I am excited for somebody like Bernie Sanders. I told myself I wasn't going to bring up politics, but, I've always been excited for him and I'm excited for what he's saying and what he's doing. And, so, outside of music, yeah, The Watchmen and Bernie Sanders. it's really hard for me to find anything really exciting other than music. I'm very music minded. I'm thinking about it all the time. I feel like I'm working on it even when I'm not actually actively moving strings on a guitar. Like I can just be working on it in my head. I can be writing. I write a lot of lists down. Like I'll even be thinking about potential track ordering or just like rewriting lyrical parts, I'm not interested in making concept records or anything because it's kind of tainted to me because of like prog rock and whatnot making, but I like having some thematic elements to a record. So a lot of times I'll even just write ideas of what I think the record is about, stuff like that. So I'm always excited to make the next thing. And especially when you get to this point, when you have most of it done, most of the songs written, then you start to really get excited about, oh, I can't wait to record it, because recording is a lot of fun too. I think it's like just being in a laboratory and with other people that are everybody's trying to work towards making the best possible outcome. And, you know, there's some fighting too, but, I'm always looking forward to making the next record, and always looking forward to the next tour too, because I just, you know, as much as I like making records and I hope people enjoy our records, but I feel like also to fully understand the band, you do have to see it, because it's like the record is the menu and the band live is the meal or something like that. I think I read that in a Fugazi book or something like that. And I was like, yeah, it's like that. When I'm not looking forward to the next record, then I'm looking forward to the next tour. Yeah, just really, I'm boring.
I mean, it's pretty incredible that you love something so much, and that even if it's not, you know, super lucrative, that it's something you're able to do and dedicate so much time to. I think that is special.
Yeah. It does come with a lot of turmoil. I'm not going to say it's all sunshine and roses. In fact, there's a lot of like heartbreak in it too, but at the core of it, there's always that driving thing to be like, I can't wait to make the next thing and really challenge myself creatively. I think most people probably feel that way too about their music.
Yeah. I'm also super bummed I missed you guys live. I hopefully on the next tour. I usually like to see a band before I talk to them too. But I look forward to future opportunities for sure.